Let's give a nice warm welcome to Rachel Blevins.
Good evening. They make these pulpits for tall people. Thank you, Pastor Perry, for the invitation to be here. It's an honor to speak to you. The Lord has something on his heart that he wants you to hear. You know what? I'm gonna mess with you a little bit. All those in these outer parts, I'd like for you to move. At least in the middle part, it's just easier to speak to you and make I'm big on eye contact. Look me in the eye. Thank you. My husband did this all the time. I rarely do this, but it really is helpful to me, and it'll help us later on with something else we're going to do. Pardon? I had some tea earlier today that I was told was good for speaking, and here is the herbal power testimonial. Helps you sing it loud, say it proud, stand up and be heard, plus gives your immune system a boost. That's pretty hard to beat, huh? Years ago, I bought a Mary Englebright greeting card that said, "Let's put the fun back in dysfunctional." The body of Christ is a little bit dysfunctional. But I'm going to change that up a little bit, and we'll say, "Let's put the fun back in fundamentals and change the world." So that's where we're going. A fundamental, the adjective, is serving as or being an essential part of a foundation, basic, primary, elementary. As a noun, it means a basic principle. If you're on a sports team, it's vital that you master the fundamentals of the game. Any team that wins a championship pays attention to fundamentals. You can add other things, but you must do the fundamentals. And it's true in every area of life. You've got to master the fundamentals before you can add other things. So this may seem a little elementary. Deal with it. I'm just going to talk to you like a mom. But it's coming from the Father's heart. If we don't maintain our health, rest being a big portion of that, we suffer. So all these things are critical. Communication is a fundamental skill that we need to have. We're going to talk quite a bit about that tonight. Our communication in this culture and the lack thereof. So we're going to go into that a little bit farther. This is a phrase that I hear a lot. Wow factor. You ever hear that? You ever say that? We all want the wow factor. And if it didn't have a wow factor, we're like bored. And people go out of their way, spend hundreds of dollars on announcements and proposals, and on it goes, because they want the wow factor. I was kind of impressed the other day when I heard Prince Harry say, they just did a quiet proposal. Isn't that good for you? You know, there's pressure to create something different. And why? Because we're bored with the ordinary. We don't see the extra in the ordinary that makes it extraordinary. So that's part of what I'm going to speak to you about tonight. Even in National Geographic, I watched a segment where editors were judging pictures, and they had this enormous screen, and they're looking at them. And as they're going through, I'm thinking, wow, that's awesome. What I would give to take a photo like that. And the guy says, yeah, that's too boring. Really? They wanted something they'd never seen before. Well, imagination and creativity is a good thing. But if we're bored with something that's beautiful, God help us. We one of the more sinister problems with being addicted to more is that it makes us blind to what we have now. Judd Wilhite from The God of Yes. We settle for less when we embrace convenience. We get fast food. We settle for less nutrition. We eat things out of season. And they're not quite as fully nutritious as they would be. Because of travel, because of transportation and technology, we have access to whatever we want. If you have the means to pay for it, it's available. And so we don't have to wait for the season to come when corn on the cob is fresh and you put butter on it and it runs down your chin. I mean, what's better than that? Or strawberries that are fresh from the garden. Oh, we can get them from Chile or somewhere else where they've been, who knows what has been done to them. But we can get it, so we feel some power with that. But we sacrifice some things because of it. Spiritually, I see many, many people running to and fro for the next big move, for the next big revival, for the next big word, to see gold dust, to see feathers, and on and on and on it goes. And they're bored with John 3:16. How sad is that? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever would believe on him should not perish, but have everlasting life. That's the good news we have. That's the fundamental truth that we celebrate. Erin McManus in The Last Arrow says, it's not that those who settle for less don't want more for their lives, that they want the more where they are and not willing to go where the more is waiting for them. Yet over and over again, we find that God presses against us and forces us to choose. How many of you have been inspired by somebody who has, you know, they just have depth, they have wisdom, and you think, I want to be like that person? And when you get to know them, you realize why they have that depth. They've been through some stuff. And it's good to know and to honor people who've been through those things. Make them your heroes, somebody that you know. A few Sundays ago, I talked to a boy in my church. He's 9. And I had picked his name out of a basket of students that we were asked to pray for during the school year. And I didn't know much about this child. So I'd been sending him a card every week, telling him, encouraging, telling him I was praying for him. So he came and thanked me. And I said, sit down here a minute. I want to ask you some more questions. I want to get to know you a little bit so I know how to pray for you. And one of the questions I asked him was, who are your heroes? Without hesitation, that child said, my mom and dad. I said, give me a fist bump. I said, that is awesome. His mom is a cancer survivor, and his dad has battled some things. And to him, his mom and dad are heroes. I pray he always feels that way. I said, you know what? I congratulate you because you know you're heroes. They're not some far-off person that you're fantasizing about what their life might be. It just helps to know that. Barry Bennett is a dean of students at Caris Bible College in Colorado Springs, and he says this, the simplicity and power of the gospel becomes boring when a heart is offended. The desire will always be towards some new thing to entertain the unsuspecting. I've been thinking about that since I read that. What is that ache we have? We'll go someplace else. It'll be better. Because we have an offended heart in some area. But God can take care of that. We're told to stay away from negative people. Surround yourself only with positive people. Is that even possible? I didn't think so. I mean, I understand the concept. You want people to encourage you, and you want to be encouraged. But let's get real. That's just not even the real world. And I read this little story about positive attitudes that was a shocker to me. And it's the story of Admiral James Stockdale, who was a prisoner of war for 8 years during the Vietnam War. And author Jim Collins asked him about those experiences. He said, how did you survive 8 years? He said, I never lost faith in the end of the story. I never doubted not only that I would get out, but also that I would prevail in the end and turn the experience into the defining event of my life, which in retrospect, I would not trade. So then, Collins asked, who didn't make it out? Admiral Stockdale replied, oh, that's easy, the optimists. He said, they were the ones who said, we're going to be out by Christmas. And Christmas would come, and Christmas would go. Then they would say, we're going to be out of Easter. And Easter would come, and Easter would go. And then Thanksgiving. And then it would be Christmas again. And they died of a broken heart. Isn't that astounding? But see, they didn't daily make it a goal. They were waiting for the big thing, the next big thing, the next big holiday. I mean, I see people all the time who are they can't wait for the weekend. So they miss all the joys of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday because they're living for the weekend. And you miss out on life, abundant life. You know, our seasons are not distinct anymore. You know, if we don't like the weather, what do? If you have the means, you go somewhere where you like the weather. You know, well, I don't have to put up with this. I'm going south, or I'm going west. I'm going to Arizona, or wherever. We don't slow down. Ecclesiastes 3:1-8 defines seasons. It says, for everything there is a season, and there's a purpose for every activity under heaven. And then we're told also to stay away from toxic relationships. Once again, is that possible? I'm not sure that it is. And yes, some are way more toxic than others. And if there's abuse, definitely we have to guard ourselves. Sometimes guard our families and our bodies. But we all have a measure of toxicity. Pride is a big toxin. And we might say, well, I'm not like that. That's the attitude of the Pharisees. Well, I'm so glad I'm not like that toxic person. Well, pride will trip you up. Jesus said in Matthew 5:13, you are the salt of the earth. But if salt loses its saltiness, how will it become salty again? Now, back in the day of Jesus, Roman soldiers were paid in salt because salt was quite valuable. We get our root word salary. Our salary comes from the root word sal, which means salt, because that was a form of payment. Well, here's something that I just learned. Let me find my spot here. Salt is the combination of two elements, sodium and chlorine. It takes an atom of each to make a molecule of salt. One of these atoms is a positive ion and the other a negative ion, causing them to join together to form salt. It may interest you to know that prior to joining, sodium is terribly toxic and chlorine is poisonous. But together, they become something the body needs and craves. They become something good. And so it is with people. The message here is that you can take two separate human beings who may be no good, useless, or even toxic alone, but when you merge them together, they become more than the sum of their parts. This merger may be a marriage or could be a business partnership. This is what salt in the temple reminds us, that when you bring people together, the result is something so much more creative, so much more powerful than individuals could ever do alone. That's from Rabbi Lapin's book. Isn't that cool? You know, you can take two poisonous elements and put them together and make something valuable. And that's what Jesus calls us, salt, because we're valuable. You know, now in our culture, we have less and less interaction. We have FaceTime, we have Facebook, we have all the social media means. But people just to sit down and say, hey, how are you? To go to someone's house intentionally and visit. How many of you have done that recently? In the last, well, I'll give you a month. Whoa. Got a few hands. Bravo. I'm proud of you. It's, and once you do it, it's like, wow, why don't I do this more often? This is so fulfilling. But we do less and less. We make grocery lists on iPhones and we can go pick up the groceries. We don't even have to mess with that. Yeah, that's a convenience. But we also miss out on the human interaction that might happen there. I've had a lot of interesting conversations in grocery stores, a lot of ministry in grocery stores. I would miss that if I just drive up and pick up my groceries. We speak in abbreviated words and emoticons and GIFs. And I'm sorry, but cyber hugs just don't cut it. Thanks for the thought, but it isn't working. You know, God made us to be together, to work together. These conveniences rob us of interaction with those who might greatly enrich our existence. And they give us a false sense of power. Well, I can just do this and I'll just push that button and bingo. We feel powerful. And yes, I like convenience. Don't get me wrong about that. Men and women become addicted to pornography where relationships aren't real or where nothing is required of the person. This is a huge, huge issue in our country, in our churches, everywhere. We are all affected, have been or will be, because of this blight on our country. This is not the real world. This is not real relationship. It's fantasy. Imagination and curiosity are gifts from God, but they must be guarded. Fantasy is unrestrained imagination. Stats are staggering regarding addictions. I read and I shared it on my Facebook last night. I mean, it just made me nauseous to read it. It was just so disturbing. But it's real. We can't put our head in the sand and ignore it. We are all affected by it. Dallas Willard was a Christian philosopher in our country. He died some time ago. His mother died when he was 4, and her instructions to his father were, set eternity before their eyes. That's what she wanted him to always teach the children. We're looking towards eternity. That's our goal. That's what the prisoner of war had. He had a goal. It seemed like eternity to him, but he daily had that goal. If we set our hearts towards eternity, things will change. We will change, and everyone around us will change. But God, he has redemption, he has solutions, and we don't have to live shackled that way. Romans 13:11-14 says, and now consider this. You know well the times you are living in. It is time for you to wake up and see what is right before your eyes. For salvation is nearer to us now than when we first believed. The darkness of night is dissolving as dawn's light draws near. So walk out on your old dark life and put on the armor of light. Isn't that a beautiful image? Put on the armor of light. May we all act as good and respectable people, living today the same as we will in the days of his coming. Do not fall into patterns of dark living, wild partying, drunkenness, sexual depravity, decadent gratification, quarreling, and jealousy. Instead, here's your solution. Wrap yourselves in the Lord Jesus, God's anointed, and do not fuel your sinful imagination by indulging your self-seeking desire for the pleasures of the flesh. We don't have to fuel those things. There's an answer. You know, we're seduced into believing we don't need each other. All these things contribute. And that's a lie from the enemy, whose motives are to steal, kill, and destroy relationships. Don't buy into that lie that we don't need each other. We do. We cannot survive in this world without others contributing to our lives. There's a little mom story here. I made these all by myself. Chocolate chip cookies, fresh from my oven today. You might get to win some in a little while. I have something up my sleeve. One day I was making cookies, and I just started looking at ingredients. And I thought, wow, it takes a lot of people doing a lot of things for me to have the ingredients to make this. So I started making a list. Well, I used flour, so we needed a wheat farmer. Sugar, we had a sugarcane farmer. Butter, dairy farmer. Eggs, chicken farmer. Salt, salt farmer. Baking soda, I think they mine that. Vanilla farmer. And I use Madagascar vanilla, so that has to come a long ways. And chocolate chips, Belgian chocolate, so you got cocoa growers. Okay, that's just for beginning. Add to this growing list manufacturers that process these goods, transportation, shipping and handling, grocers, employers who pay wages so one can purchase these goods, utilities companies that supply power, cookie sheets, utensils, bowls, stoves, ovens used to cook, bake, and many more people and processes. So did I make these myself? I did not. I assembled the ingredients. We are dependent, even if we don't want to admit it. And our culture prides itself on independence. Our country, it's like, we like that independence. Yeah, I like it too. I like the freedoms of it. One of my beloved aunts died last Friday, and she was fiercely independent. And one of the aides told me something that she did recently. She loved to work with tools and fix things, and she kept back her table knife at lunch. And by golly, she worked and worked, and she got that alarm off her walker. Yeah. She was a determined woman. So it has its benefits. But Song of Solomon 2:15 says, "Catch the foxes for us, yes, the little foxes. They are ruining the vineyards where our vineyards are in bloom." They steal the little things. And see, these little things add up to big things. And then in Jed Wilhite's book, The God of Yes, I found this very interesting story. In his neighborhood, or a neighborhood near him, there was a rash of robberies. In all, more than 24 homes were hit with tens of thousands of dollars worth of items stolen, yet not a single police report was ever filed. The burglar was using an ingenious strategy, which allowed him to move from home to home over several weeks without being detected. What was his plan? He never stole anything big. He slipped into houses and stole the small valuable items no one would notice missing, such as small amounts of cash, seldom worn jewelry, and the camcorder you only pull out for special events. He walked by $1,000 TVs and computers, but didn't do that. One odd thing he did, he stole a very expensive vacuum cleaner. He figured they'll just think they loaned it to somebody. Little did any of them know that all these things were down the street in a pawn shop. And then one day, a neighbor saw him in another man's house and alerted the police. And he was caught. He offered a full confession. And as the slow process of notification began, people were shocked and shaken to learn that not only had someone been in their home, but also that something small had been stolen. They had no idea. Eventually, all the items returned, including the vacuum, but something else returned as well. A newfound appreciation for the small things. Taking them for granted one day, they might be missing. Isn't that cool? In the parable of the sower, the one part says, the word was sown among thorns. That's someone who hears the word, but the worry of the world and deceitfulness of riches chokes the word out and becomes unfruitful. We get consumed with stuff. Judd Wilhite gives an example of savoring. I use that word quite a bit, but because I love to savor the moment and the day. Savoring is defined as the intentional and prolonged enjoyment of everyday wonders. Rather than rushing through the day, you slow down and appreciate the gift it offers. Simply being alive to the present moment and all it offers. I worked in hospice for years, and that ministry helped me tremendously to learn to appreciate the day. You know, that time is precious. And I loved being with the dying because the dying teach you about living. They teach you, you know, they don't want to chit-chat. They want to be real. They want to talk about living and what's important and precious. I'm so grateful for that time. You know, my youngest son was home for Thanksgiving, and his two children had already put their pajamas on, and he came in and he says, hey, kids, put on your shoes and your coats. We're going outside for a minute. Why? Come on. I want to show you something. Well, they live in the city of Toledo, in Greater Toledo. And he said, I want you to see something. And they went outside, and it was pitch black. And it was a clear night, full of stars. He said, this is what we miss. Here's all the stars. God has all of us named. And I just want you to see it. I thought, yes. I loved it. You know, do you notice someone whistling? People don't whistle a lot anymore. My parents both whistled. My auntie that just died, she whistled. And I saw someone the other day whistling while they were working. You know, they're usually whistling something happy. I was thinking today, I don't think I've ever heard anybody whistle the blues. It just doesn't work. So, you know, just notice those little things. Notice spider webs and bird's nests and, you know, walk through the grocery aisle. Look at all the variety and color and design and imagine what they taste like. Our Creator did all that stuff. I mean, I was walking into Lowe's recently and there was a fall display and there was, I think it was flowering kale or something. It stopped me in my tracks. It was so beautiful, intricate. I thought, wow, God, you're amazing. When we stop to do those things, then it's easy to worship Him. When I go out with my camera, I go to worship. Like Dr. Stanley, he's the famous Baptist preacher from Atlanta. He's a phenomenal photographer. He said, I don't just take photos. I go looking for God. I said, yes. It just stirs something in me when I see the design, the purpose He has in everything. We're going to show a little video at the last here, and there's a photo on there that it's not the sharpest, clearest photo, but that photo changed my life. It was about 4 years ago, and I had been caring for my mother, who has dementia, and I have a special needs son. And I was just feeling overwhelmed. I have to go take a walk. So across from my house is a dam. We jokingly say we live across the dam driveway. And people are like, what? But so I went to the dam. And it was spring. And there were these beautiful little yellow wildflowers. They were about an inch in diameter. And I had a camera with me. And it was It wasn't fancy, but it had a little zoom on it. And I thought, I'll just sit in the flowers and see what I can do. So I'm zooming in, trying to get a clear picture. Like I say, it's not as sharp as I'd like. But when I put it up on the computer, I gasped. Because behind this minuscule petal is a minuscule grasshopper peeking around. And I said, Lord, this is 1 inch of the universe. And here's this grasshopper looking at me. And it's like you're saying, I see you. I see you. I see you. I see you. My favorite name for God is Elroy, the God who sees me. He sees me. He knows everything about me. I can't hide what I'm thinking from you. I mean, I can hide what I'm thinking. I can't hide it from him. He knows the thoughts and intents of my heart. That's just astounding. When we stop to take that in, it changes everything. So now when I take up a camera lens, I see the world differently. I see him. I see him in people. I see him in nature. And it's a worship experience. I mean, that's all there is to it. Doesn't mean every photo I take is prize winning, but. So little things that can steal our connections, offenses. Ted Decker says, forgiveness isn't absolving another of their crime. Rather, it is letting go of the offense you embraced when that crime was committed against you. And isn't that what we do? Someone hurts us, and we embrace that offense. And we don't want to let it go. And we don't want to let them go of the offense. Jealousy, comparison to others, burnout. This time of year, especially, we get burned out. There's so much pressure. Come on, do it. You've got your shopping done. We got to see who can decorate the quickest. We rush the seasons. Drives me crazy. I don't want Christmas in July. I don't want it in October. I don't want it in November. I know I'm alone, but that's how we rush and how we miss the daily stuff, because we got to be the first. We got to get it done. Oh, we just love it. Why? You're missing the extra and the ordinary. Sometimes we try to do more than the Lord even asks us to do. We want to fix people. We see something. We're bombarded with, you know, just going through Facebook. You scroll through. Somebody's having a great day. Somebody just got a bad diagnosis. Somebody just had a baby. Somebody's getting married. Oh, somebody's brother died. And it's this up and down emotion, and you feel torn with all of this. So you have to guard yourself. Don't be sucked into that. What is God asking you to do? So sometimes you have to put that away. There is time to do everything God assigned you to do. I had an elderly gentleman, a farmer in Missouri, and if he ever heard me say, this is when I was like 19 and 20, if he ever heard me say I didn't have time, he'd go, what's the matter? Didn't you get 24 hours like the rest of us? Yes, Otis. Sorry. But we do that. It's like we're more important because we got so much to do. Well, is it what God assigned you to do? If it's not, let it go. Simple as that. We're walking this journey together, shoulder to shoulder. And yes, it gets messy. And yes, we get hurt. Yes, we get wounded. My father was in ministry over 50 years. My husband and I were in ministry over 40. Had a few scars. That's okay. You know what? After Jesus died and rose again, he still had the scars. Evidence of his wounding. They didn't go away. We have those scars. But if we let the wounds heal, the scars just say, we made it. Yeah. Yes, we made it. We got through it. And we have excuses. Well, I don't like the service. I don't like the worship. I don't like the songs. I'm just going to go do my own thing, me and Jesus. Oh, that would make my husband so furious. No, we're made to be together. Yes, it's hard at times. See, once again, we're going back to the wow factor. We want to be wowed. Woo, didn't you get goosebumps today? Woo, that was so cool. I mean, I've done it. You know, one of the things that that I missed after my husband died, I missed that iron on iron, iron sharpening iron. Now that sounds like crazy, but that's how we keep each other sharp. I'm not talking about arguments. I'm just like, you know, when I'd be full of myself, he'd say, okay, woman, you need to calm down. You're right, I do. He would temper me. You know, right now I don't have to compromise. I don't have to adjust to his schedule, which was pretty erratic. I can watch whatever I want. I can cook if I want to. If I don't want to, I don't cook. You can become a selfish slob because you're not having to adjust to somebody else. It's not healthy. My brother was just here recently, and he's been a bachelor his whole life. And we were talking about this, how you can get some quirky habits living alone. You know, because there's nobody that is. Knock it off. You know, is that necessary? There's value in that. When we see each other, you know, screwing up, and we say, you know, you might want to be careful about that. There's benefit in that. That's why we need each other. You know, our nature is just to avoid hardship. I mean, I don't sign up for it, but it's come, whether or not I signed up for it. We don't pay a lot of attention sometimes to the elderly. I mean, I've been in the nursing home a lot in the last 2 years, and I'll still be there for quite a while because I have another aunt. But I see so many people that are neglected. You know, it takes so little to make their day. There's a man, I call him Mr. Jim. And I sat down with him one day. He was the only one in the dining area. And I said, how's it going, Mr. Jim? Not so good. And I said, where did you live before you came here? Charleston, West Virginia. I said, well, what did you do there? I was a shoe salesman, and he told me the company. And asked him a little more about his family. And then I didn't say anything for a little bit, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, he had tears in his eyes. He said, thank you. I sat with him less than 10 minutes, but it meant something to him. And it touched me, too, that it touched him. There are people that are aching, that are standing next to you in line at the grocery store, at work, in the pew. They don't want a cyber hug. They want a hand on the shoulder that says, I'm here for you. I'll walk with you. I'm not going to leave. I'm here for the long haul. Last spring, I went to one of the most touching funerals I've ever been to. My auntie that just died, this was for the daughter of her dear friends. And Carolyn was 44 when she died. She was born with profound disabilities. The only word she ever said was Dada. Can you imagine how precious that was to her father? We sat beneath a tent, shaded by an evergreen, in a rural cemetery near here. And her precious pastor shared some things about her life. Jeremiah 2:5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. God made her for a purpose. So what was her purpose? What did she teach us? Dependency. We all need each other. If we ever come to the place that we feel we have no need of anyone's help, we are deceived. She taught us love. How to love another human being unconditionally. service. It's important to serve one another. Giving. I loved it. This one really touched me. How to give expecting nothing in return. We don't give like that very often. We want a reward. But they gave to Carol, knowing she could not give back much. Sacrifice. Sometimes we are required to sacrifice to meet the needs of another. Joy. She expressed joy when she sat in her favorite yellow chair and listened to the birds sing. Music made her heart sing when she played her xylophone. She knew joy in simple things. Gratitude. She expressed her grateful heart with smiles and laughter for all those who cared for her. Dedication. Her parents demonstrated the eternal values as they faithfully loved and served her. They made sure she enjoyed things for which there are no price tags or entry fees, yet they are priceless. The brevity of life, James 4:14. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. And the recurring theme of her life, shared by her family, friends, and caretakers, was joy. Look what they all would have missed had not Carol been born. Yes, it was hard. Nobody denies that. It was very hard. It's the least of these. That's how the Word becomes flesh and dwells among us. When we serve each other with a heart like that, that is the Word becoming flesh. It's precious. So very precious. We have to look beyond the appearance and ask Holy Spirit to show you how He sees other people. That's one of the benefits of prophetic words, where we hear what God's heart is, what He sees us. You know, sometimes we're like, seriously? You know, I remember getting a prophetic word in another church one time, and the guy's going, I see you standing tall with his shiny armor like Joan of Arc. Well, I couldn't get past the burning at the stake thing, you know. It's like, seriously? But that's how we do. You know, we're the same as Sarah. We laugh. You know, acknowledge the virtues in each other. Don't just greet each other, but, wow, you look amazing. You look hot. You're a hot mama. I detest that. Maybe you do. Good for you. How about if we said to someone, I see the joy of the Lord in your eyes. I love the way you're faithful. It inspires me. You know how to make order out of chaos. I'm speaking to her because she's got a bunch of kids. And she does make order out of chaos. You know, speak to the virtue in that person, to the character. You'd be amazed, you know, and ask thoughtful questions when you greet one another. How is God faithful to you this week? And it makes that person think, well, let's see. And you take inventory. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing. What are you struggling with right now? How can I pray for you? Teach your children and grandchildren to look for God. And I did this with my grandchildren a few months ago. They were at my house. I had 6 of them, 10 and under, all day and all night. And I survived. And we had gone to the Ohio Bird Sanctuary, and we just had a marvelous time. And it was right before dinner, and I just, the Holy Spirit just gave me this idea. I said, okay, which one of you saw God today? And they're like, huh? Did you see him, Grandma? I said, I did. Where? Where did you see him? I said, well, Isaiah, I saw him in you when you protected your cousins. We were in a little bit of a dicey situation, and you knew what to do, and you protected us. God protects us. That's like God. I looked at Gianna, who's quite the little organizer, and I said, you made order out of chaos before we went on the field trip. You gathered all our supplies and organized them. God's like that. She's like, wow. And Savannah, I said, Savannah, I watched how you helped your little brother Hudson. You made sure he was going and following the rules like we needed. You were watching over him, caring for him, supporting him, just like God. She was like, whoa. She kind of gets little giggles, and you see her dimples. Elizabeth is a nature whisperer. I said, Elizabeth, I watched you hold that rabbit. You were so tender with it, just like God. It's like, well, yeah. And I said, Hudson, you followed and helped. He's four. And I said, you were cooperating and following the rules. I said, God is so proud of that. Well, don't you know, we just had a marvelous dinner. You know, because I had blessed them. I said, Lord, thank you for giving me that insight, how to speak to them. You know, some of them have had prophetic words. And when I see them acting out on those, I speak to that. You know, the one granddaughter, she's now 17, but a man spoke to her early in her life that she was a leader. He said, this particular word, it's rare that I ever give this to a woman, to a girl. He said, she is a leader of the pack. And so when she'd be doing things, I said, look, you're a leader. I said, that's what the man of God said. And she says, yep, he was right. So you build on that. That's how we build up each other. It makes all the difference. You know, sometimes I'll say to a cashier who looks so weary, I said, it must be hard standing on your feet all day. And they'll go, you know, or if they're feeling rushed and they have a rude customer, I just say, just take a deep breath. I'm not in a hurry. It's okay. And they're just like, when my friend Joni was near death in the nursing home, she was just in her late 50s, and she felt so worthless in the kingdom. She couldn't do anything like she did before. But she was wrong. I watched when they would bring her food, and sometimes she could eat it, sometimes she couldn't. Sometimes it was just not edible. But she would write a note and thank the server. Thank you for serving me today. And write her name. And one day I was there when one of the women came in who had worked in that department for years and years. She came back in. She'd read the note. And she cried. She says, no one has ever thanked me before. I said, Joni, your work's not done. I watched the same with my auntie that just died. I mean, she got in a bad way and was grumpy and grouchy, and it was not a good scene some days. But as she lay dying the last 3 days, they would come in there with tears in their eyes. Oh, I love her so much. She sang. We loved when she sang. Now, she had a quaky 94-year-old voice that was out of tune. But she sang with all she had. And that's what was important. We have wisdom, unlimited wisdom available to us. That's my first prayer every day. Lord, give me a download of wisdom today. I cannot do without wisdom. I need discernment, but most of all, I want wisdom. And he's faithful to do it. It's so important that we stay in the Word. You got to be grounded in the Word. You have to have this Word hidden in your heart so that you might not sin against God. Times are getting tough. If you don't have that core, you're going to be in a bad place. You've got to have the Word. There's no excuse not to have the Word in your heart. You can listen to it. You can read it. Have your children listen to it. They know lyrics to a lot of things they shouldn't know. They can learn what the Word of God says. So have eternity in mind when you do that. You know, it's real simple what the early church did. These are the fundamental actions of believers, Acts 2:42 and 43. All the believers devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to sharing in meals, including the Lord's Supper, and to prayer. A deep sense of awe came over all of them. They weren't waiting on the wow factor. And the apostles performed many miraculous signs and wonders, and all the believers met together in one place and shared everything they had. They sold their property and possessions and shared the money with those in need. They worshiped together at the temple each day, met in homes for the Lord's Supper, and shared their meals with great joy and generosity, all the while praising God and enjoying the goodwill of all the people. And each day, the Lord added to their fellowship those who were being saved. That's the basis of it. Fellowship, breaking of bread, prayer, listening to the word. Anything else is icing on the cake. Now, God is faithful just in everyday, simple ways. Sometimes he's candid with us. Sometimes he's humorous, mystical. Sometimes just mischievous. Think that he does. You know, he used the burning bush to capture Moses. He used frogs and lice and flies and locusts to get the attention of the stubborn Egyptians. He spoke through a donkey to the stubborn prophet. He told us to look at the lilies of the field and the birds of the air. Simple things. You know, don't be such a rush. Look for those simple things. Okay, we're going to watch a video. This is the first one I did, so there's a couple little bloopers in it. But I just used everyday people, mostly my family, scriptures, and just things that you would see every day to remind us how God is faithful. We're going to watch this, and then we're going to do a couple more things. simple ways. That's all the Lord wants from us, just to draw near, to pay attention to those little things. If you'd like prayer, so that you can notice those things. We sang some of those things tonight about open my eyes, open my heart. When we sang, I will remain confident of this, that I will see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. It's all around us if we have eyes to see and ears to hear, hearts that pay attention. So if you'd like prayer, I would like for you to stand. We have a Redeemer. I want you to put your hands on your eyes. Everybody do this, actually. Say, Lord, open my eyes to see truth. Put your hands on your ears. Unplug my ears to hear your voice. Put your hand on your heart. Soften the stony places in my heart. Help me to reach out and touch others with words of blessing. Consecrate my imagination with truth. Help me to hide the word, your word in my heart, so that I might not sin against you. Stir up a love of your children in me. Help me to slow down and rest. Everybody take a deep breath. And release it. That's a piece of God right there. The breath that he gives in your lungs. Lord, help me to be grateful for little things. Amen.